Thousands of dogs, hundreds of breeds, they converged at the Westminster Kennel Club dog show earlier this month. A pair of Economoc handlers, they showed their dogs. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Are you into dog shows? What do you want to know about Westminster, our country's most renowned dog show? 800-642-1234. Otto Sturm and Christy Coomer, they own a dog training and behavioral needs business. They compete at dog shows, including the prestigious Westminster. Otto shows his American Staffordshire Terrier, Mina. Otto, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having us.
And Christy is here as well, shows her rat terrier named Gadget. Christy, welcome to you.
Hi, good morning, and thanks a lot for having us.
Yeah, good morning. So, Christy, this was your first time for you and Gadget at Westminster. Can you put that feeling into words?
Yeah, you know, I have been wanting to show a dog at Westminster for the last 15 years. I've gone many times as a spectator, and I finally had a dog that was able to be competitive enough and then also able to go. It's a pretty rigorous process to be able to go to the show, so Gadget really proved himself over the last couple of years and was able to go and compete against the best dogs in the world.
Oh, wow. How do you qualify for Westminster? What is that process like?
So qualifying for the Westminster Dog Show requires that your dog is a champion with the American Kennel Club. So what that means is you have to go out to dog shows, you have to compete against a certain number of dogs, and you have to gain points. And the points all kind of add up. And then the top dogs with the top points get invited to come to Westminster.
Otto, what was it like for you making it to the big show?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I never thought I would be showing a dog at Westminster. You know, all dog enthusiasts, I think the Westminster Dog Show is something we gather around the TV every year and watch and, you know, eat popcorn and have drinks and think, oh, man, that's pretty amazing to be at that level, but to actually go and experience it with your own dog is a whole nother level of craziness. Just being able to go and be among the best of the best in the country, and even they bring dogs from all over the world for this, is just an absolute honor. It was amazing.
And, it wasn't held at Madison Square Garden like it has been for over a century, you know, with COVID precautions and all. What was the setting, Christy?
So the competition took place at the Lindenhurst Estate, which was a private facility. And it was absolutely beautiful. They had the castle there. It was right by the water. There was plenty of spots for the dogs to go potty on the grass. I actually really, really, really loved the location. We've been to Madison Square Garden before, and it's a little cramped, and sometimes the dogs have a hard time picking a place to go potty because there's no grass. So the Lindenhurst Estate was a really cool kind of once-in-a-lifetime opportunity venue, and we got to go there, and it was super cool. I wish they would hold it there every year.
Otto, what did you think of the venue, the mansion?
Oh, yeah, it was just far better for the dogs because not a lot of dogs are acclimated to the inner workings of New York City, you know. And like Christy had mentioned, being inside that environment, you know, where you're at Madison Square Garden and there's literally not one blade of grass to be seen, makes it a little trickier for the dogs. Then you have to be around the smog and the cars and the people smoking cigarettes on the street, and it's quite an imposing environment. The castle setting was so much more expansive and relaxed, and you know, you got some fresh air and the scenic views of the Hudson River, and I think the mansion was a far better setting for this type of event. But you know, the people at the Westminster Kennel Club say Westminster is the garden, so they've already scheduled back next year, I believe.
You know, I am so fascinated by the breeds that I've never seen before. And there is this one that I saw in the pictures, and I think you pronounce it Beaver Terrier. It's spelled B-I-E-W-E-R and has this like long straight hair and a ponytail, like a ponytail for a tail. And
yep.
I went, yeah. I mean, Otto, did you come across dogs like that that you've never seen before or I haven't seen before?
Well, we're pretty crazy when it comes to our love for not only our breeds, but all dogs. So we research and follow and educate ourselves on all the breeds. This year was actually the first year for the Beaver Terrier. And before they gained full AKC recognition, they were in a bracket called the FSS. And we actually showed some of our FSS dogs, which means Foundation Stock Services. And this is a process that some of these rare breeds have to go through before they get full AKC accreditation.
Ah, I see. You know, and also, Christy, the dogs with a corded coat that kind of like resemble dreadlocks, they're like mops.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, they're so fascinating. Can you kind of?
Yeah. So the cords are actually man-made, and they're quite a bit of upkeep. You know, they require a lot of bathing and attention and oils and lotions, and they get dirty really easily. And a lot of times I think people see these coats, or they see these dogs out in public and they're like, oh my gosh, they're matted. They need to be groomed. But you know, these particular breeds with these particular coats are very high maintenance, and these people take incredibly good care of those cords.
Wow. We're talking with Christy Coomer and Otto Sturm. They're dog trainers and handlers in Oconomowoc. They compete professionally all over the world, most recently at the prestigious Westminster Dog Show. You can join in with your questions about dog shows, if you show dogs, what grooming is like, and what you want to know about Westminster. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So let's talk about your dog. Christy, tell us about Gadget. How would you best describe her personality, her appearance?
So Gadget's a boy, and I got Gadget actually just as a farm dog. When I purchased him, it wasn't even necessarily to show him. But we show other dogs, and I thought, well, he's small enough. He can come on the road, and we can show him too. And, you know, lo and behold, he ended up being this big superstar. He's a very cool dog. He's very true to his breed. He's a very good hunting dog. He has a very good social personality. He loves every dog he meets. He loves every person he meets. He thinks everybody's his best friend. He's a really, really, really special kind of once-in-a-lifetime dog.
Wow. It's like a whole new world for Gadget. I mean, in terms of what you had predicted.
Yeah, I had no idea when I bought him that he was going to be a superstar show dog. I just bought him to be a farm dog and to kind of help take care of some of the vermin on our 46 acres that we live on.
Little did you know, how often do you show Gadget?
So Gadget, when I was showing him really heavily, he was probably out at least 1 or 2 weekends every single month for about 2 years.
Okay. Otto, tell us about Mina and, you know, and just a little bit about Mina's background.
Yeah, so she's a really special girl. I was looking for a female kind of to add to our program, and Christy had acquired her half-brother actually through some interesting circumstances. Some people had imported him, and he was kind of entirely too much dog for them, for their particular lifestyle. So through the grapevine, they contacted us and said, hey, we think this dog needs to live in a working home. And I was like, well, if you want to drive him to Oconomowoc from Minneapolis, we'll take a gander at him and see how it goes. And from the moment his feet hit the grass at our farm, Christy fell in love and ran over and grabbed the leash. And JJ's proved himself to be quite the special working dog. He championed out in just 3 shows, which is quite a feat. And he's an amazing working dog. Christy will actually be competing with him on the upcoming season of America's Top Dog. But so when they first started developing their relationship, we developed a relationship with the breeder of the dog, because he was way down in Mexico City, and he appreciated that we saved the dog and put him to good use and gave him a loving home. So I asked Dr. Vivas if he had a female comparable that was maybe either already championed or definitely had the ability to be championed. And he said, say no more. I got you covered. And he sent me some pictures, and we pretty much fell in love with her right away. So we were on our way to the American Staffordshire Terrier National Specialty that year. And we were making the long trip out to California, and Dr. Vivas flew up from Mexico City and brought Mina with him. And the very next day, I showed her for the first time, and she won best of winners at the American Staffordshire Terrier National Special the first time I showed her, the first time she was ever shown in America.
Wow.
So we just knew she was special right from the get-go. And then not only is she an amazing show dog, but her temperament is absolutely stunning and flawless, and she has incredible working ability. I'll also be competing with her on the upcoming season of America's Top Dog.
So when you got your invitation to Westminster, what did you do? I mean, how did you change it all or start preparing Mina for Westminster?
Oh, man. We already have a pretty rigorous training, conditioning, you know, health and beauty program as it is. But then once we got the tickets to the big show, we had to definitely step it up a couple notches, you know, because there you're not just going to the fairgrounds across the county. Yeah. You're going, you know, to the garden. So, you know, everything had to be brought up a level, you know, around the clock, just meal prepping and exercise and training. You know, and really, I come from a working dog background, so my focus has always been more on the sports, and Christy's from the showing background. So she kicked her coaching into overdrive with me and really pushed it to the limit so that I could go out there and compete against the people who actually know what they're doing.
Christy, when you got the invitation, how did you change it all with Gadget, or how did you prep?
Well, when I got the letter in the mail, I think I stared at it for like a minute straight. and, you know, nothing with Gadget's routine changed too much other than just more conditioning and more training. The dogs are worked really regularly. And, you know, he did the same thing. He had no idea he was going there. He was still outside hunting every morning and doing Gadget things and running around with his buddies. But yeah, we definitely took a little bit of extra care with the coat, with grooming. And then also the dogs have an exercise routine, and he got extra exercise before the show too, to make sure he was nice and muscly and handsome looking.
Ooh, Christy Coomer with us, Otto Sturm, their dog handlers and trainers. They own You and Your Dog, a dog training business in Oconomowoc. And they competed in the coveted Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show earlier this month. Have you ever wondered what it's like to compete at that level? Are you a dog groomer? What's it like to prepare to show a dog? Join in any aspect, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about Westminster Dog Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's hear some play-by-play for the judging of Wasabi, the Pekingese who took best in show.
His tapering hindquarters, massive front end, and mane earn him the name Lion Dog. This is Pekingese, number 7.
So she spent a considerable amount of time examining the head, that envelope-shaped head, the details that go along with it. Pekingese. Her hands in there under the coat.
They have won best in show 4 times.
And now she'll, of course, look for that proper Pekingese gait.
Yeah, I think I commented on last night that I've been told that it looks like a goldfish moving through the water.
Judging, agility, grooming, join in on Westminster, 800-642-1234. Christy Coomer and Otto Sturm, they're dog handlers and trainers, and they competed with their dogs at Westminster earlier this month. Otto, you know, for novices like us, how does the judging work?
Oh, man. So every breed has a written standard, and the standard is the idea of perfection for that breed. So the people who originally started to fancy the breed and to create the club around that breed, and they got together and they said, hey, we love this breed so much. Let's make sure that it stays the same for future generations, or at least continues to improve on the same path that we want. So they wrote down exactly what the head should look like, what the eyes and teeth should look like, how the shoulders should lay back, how the coat should be, how the gait should appear, or how the dog should move, in other words. And when the judges in the ring judging these dogs, they're not looking at, oh, is the Pekingese better than the wire hair fox terrier or the hound dog? What they're looking at is the Pekingese closer to its own idea of perfection than the wire hair fox terrier is closer to its own idea of perfection, or than the hound dog is closer to its own idea of perfection? So the dogs are really supposed to be competing against themselves, not so much the other dogs in the ring
that
level.
Yeah. I mean, but Christy, how do judges deal with their own biases? I mean, we're flawed human beings. We have biases. How does that work?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. And most judges that judge dogs have grown up in dog show families, and they have their own breeds that they really like, and they've shown and they've put a lot of work into. And I think sometimes when you go into the ring, and like if the judges raise German Shepherds, they might really, you know, favor the German Shepherd, or they might be extra hard on the German Shepherd because they, you know, have such a high standard for what it should look like. But there's definitely biases. I mean, you can't help but love some breeds, and some dogs go out in the ring too, and they just really shine, and they kind of are like, hey, look at me, I'm the hottest thing out here, you better pick me. And you just kind of can't help but draw your eye to these dogs who have incredible personalities.
We're talking with Christy Coomer and Otto Sturm. They're dog trainers and handlers. They compete professionally, most recently at the Westminster Dog Show. You can join in. Do you and your dog compete in dog shows? What's your dog's name? Have you ever won a competition? Share your story with us, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org and share what you want to know about Westminster. So I'm wondering, you know, that with the two of you, how competitive, I mean, you're business partners, and I understand also in a relationship, how do you deal with the competition between each other?
Well, I let her win most of the time.
Oh, okay.
Is that how it's going to go?
I would say we're actually like fairly like friendly competition. We both want each other to do well. When one of our dogs does well, it really just kind of uplifts the breed a little bit. And we definitely are competitive. I think that's what makes us really good, is that we do push each other and we do want to win. But at the end of the day, like, it feels really good when he wins. And I know he probably feels the same way too when we win. And it's like it's just a win for the breed and a win for the fancy.
Do you find that you each have your strengths, Otto?
Oh, yes, for sure. Christy has many more years experience than me with the show dogs, especially the AKC show dogs. That's 100% her forte. I always tell people, you know, she orchestrates the whole dog show circuit. I just put on a fancy suit, run the dog in a circle, and hope I don't look dumb.
I think there's more to it than that. But you know, Chris.
There is.
Yeah. Christy, what type of grooming preparations are done ahead of a dog show?
So, you know, obviously depending on the breed, every dog has its own kind of grooming requirements, and every coat needs to be taken care of in a kind of its own special way. Otto and I are super lucky that we have dogs that have what we call slick or smooth coated hair. So they require bathing, and then they have a special lotion that they wear before they show, which kind of makes their hair smooth and soft. And they're pretty like what we call wash and wear. So they're a pretty easy breed to keep up on grooming, unlike the standard poodle or the Commodore or the Tibetan Spaniel, which is like hours and hours and hours of prep.
Yeah, what do those types of dogs go through? Can you kind of walk us through?
Sure. So like in the morning, so the dogs that require more grooming typically show later in the day, and this allows the handlers and the owners more time for grooming. So they wake up in the morning, they're usually up before us, they're bathing the dogs, they're blow drying them with a hand blow dryer, they're, you know, doing last minute kind of, you know, clippings and trimming, and it's so much work.
Yeah.
And every single time I see these dogs, I'm so grateful that we have dogs with short hair.
Oh, well, let's bring in Lisa now from Menominee Falls. Lisa, hi. What is your question about Westminster?
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. So, interestingly enough, I'm headed right now to Madison, Wisconsin for a dog agility trial. So I'm very interested in Westminster. Of course, I'm a little bit more interested in the portion related to agility. So I'm curious about if they know much about, if your guests know much about agility and how that particular portion of the trial works. What about the cameras, the setup, the things that we don't see on television?
Lisa, thanks. Otto, you go first.
Yeah, good question. So I haven't actually got to go to the Masters agility run at Westminster before, but I have seen it on TV a number of times. And for the most part, I think just like the confirmation part, they sort of hide the cameras into kind of the environment, you know, with those big yellow silo looking things. And I don't really know if I've witnessed too many handheld like cameras on crew running around. But I will tell you this from experience from competing in America's Top Dog, which does include some heavy agility portions, that when you do go to a TV show type setting and there's lights and there's crew and there's a guy with a big camera hanging from his chest that has to have another guy hanging onto his belt loop to make sure that he doesn't run over stuff, or there's a camera on a cart, that there's no real adequate way to prepare your dog ahead of time for that. You just have to hope they have a bomb-proof temperament.
Wow. Christy, what are your thoughts on agility?
Agility is, obviously, it's a super fun event, and it's something that I used to compete in when I was younger. I don't currently have any dogs that are really competitive in agility, so I don't currently do it, but we do it for fun. We do it with our own personal dogs, too, just to teach body awareness, and it's a good exercise for them, too. I wish her the best of luck in her competition. Agility is a really, really great thing for people to get involved in. Mixed breeds can do it. Purebred dogs can do it. Rescue dogs can do it. And we always are encouraging people to get out there and do stuff with their dogs.
Well, very quickly, what is the next goal for you two? You know, you've done Westminster. What do you have your sights set on next?
So after we finished Westminster, preparation went full speed into JJ and Mina for the upcoming season of America's Top Dog. The season starts on June 29th, and we'll compete sometime in July.
Gotcha. Well, best of luck. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Christy Coomer and Otto Sturm, their dog handlers and trainers. They own You and Your Dog, a dog training services and behavioral needs facility in Oconomowoc, and they recently competed at the Westminster Dog Show. Ahead this hour, Wisconsin immigrant rights organizers are marching to the state capitol from Milwaukee. We hear from advocates who demand reform and a pathway to citizenship. With your thoughts on what comprehensive immigration reform means, 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network. Hi, it's Kate Archer-Kent. We're prepping for an upcoming discussion with the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, Neel Kashkari. What do you want to know about the state of our economic recovery here in the Midwest? Interest rate hikes, economy overheating? Leave your question for the Fed president. Here it is, 833-424-3327. One more time, that voicemail box, 833-424-3327. Be sure to mention your name and city so we can thank you on the air. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a new poem from a Milwaukee writer.
Finding forgiveness is deeply personal. Sometimes it's easy to forgive someone who's wronged you and move on. Other times, the road to forgiveness is long and bumpy. But what if forgiveness isn't an option? Writer Deshaun McKinney of Milwaukee is exploring this in his new collection of poetry, Father Forgive Me. He shares one poem from that book on forgiveness.
Somewhere you read forgiveness and dreamt about killing a man. You hear forgiveness unburdens and check that the knife is still by your pillow. Sometimes you feel sorry and remember your father's words, how you suck in your stomach in mirrorless rooms and take pride in no one believing you were ever that big in your resurrection. You tell yourself that you are a man now, But every night, write a hymn for the boy who tried to scrub his stretch marks into oblivion. You think of what he would have been if worshipped, if celebrated instead of sacrifice. Wonder what to set upon an altar for sensitive black boys. Regret the threat of the knife, but polish the metal. Reset it anyway, having learned young that sensitive black boys were fighters of the world's accord. Learned young that you would have to unlearn your tears, but learn how to store them for one day. You remind yourself that it's never too late to get an education. Hope one day is less tomorrows away when you awake. Next to the blade will be a letter addressed to black women, handwritten, for fixing you plates of collard greens and pig's feet as large as the table, calling you baby and weighing your report cards heavier than the digits on any bathroom, hallway, living room scale. You tell yourself you are a man now, that you say I love you to the homies without context and hope it sounds as soft as you believe love needs to be. On the most tender nights, you scroll through memories of smiles, hugs, travels, and sex to preempt the dreams. You wake to the stillness of 4 a.m., having read about forgiveness somewhere, and forgive yourself for having trouble finding it.
That's writer Deshaun McKinney reading his poem on forgiveness. He explains the inspiration behind that piece.
This poem was really coming from a space of just thinking about the idea of forgiveness. You know, so often when we experience some kind of hardship or trauma or betrayal or whatever it is, we're often told that forgiveness is the path to move forward. And like, it's almost as if that's what you have to do or you're supposed to do. And that's the only way to heal from something. I think of it as an interesting idea of, well, it's never that simple. And I think we so often force people into it that idea of me having to forgive can also be harmful in some ways. And I'm of the mind that that's not necessarily the only way to move forward. So for me, when I was writing this poem, I really wanted to just kind of grapple with the complexity. What does it look like when you hear these things, I should forgive, or I read about forgiveness as the poem says, and I'm actually having trouble getting to that point of forgiveness? And just kind of what does that look like?
McKinney's poem is part of a greater collection of his work called Father Forgive Me.
The book is called Father Forgive Me, and it's really a book that grapples with and nuances generational traumas. And it's really figuring out how does it affect you? How does it follow you through your life? I wanted to present different time periods and different scenarios of how it impacts you, and then wants to grapple with that idea of forgiveness, and which really pairs down to what do you do with these experiences and this trauma, and how do you move forward? And so it's, these poems all have that through line of that journey of you experience this thing that is very impactful on your life and you're carrying this weight, and then how do you move through the world and where do you go next? And really about how do you live with things that have been imposed upon you. I think that's kind of what I hope to get across with this book.
Writer Deshaun McKinney is from Milwaukee. He recently released a new collection of poetry called Father Forgive Me through Black Sunflowers Poetry Press. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now they're marching 9 days, more than 90 miles from Milwaukee to Madison, drawing attention to immigration reform and pressuring Democrats in Congress to include a pathway to citizenship for millions of immigrants in our country. Do you depend on migrant workers? What does immigration reform mean to you? It's 800-642-1234. Hiram Rabadan Torres is marching. Hiram owns an auto repair shop and is president of Latinos Unidos of Fond du Lac. Hiram, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, ma'am. Glad to be here.
Good morning. We also have Christine Newman Ortiz, executive director of the immigrant rights organization Voces de la Frontera. Christine, welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
So where, Christine, are you on this journey to Madison?
We're right now in Jefferson County. Today is day 6. And we're very excited because today Governor Evers is going to be joining our delegation of immigrant essential workers, family members, and supporters as we leave on this day 6. towards Madison and in support of the call for Biden to include citizenship for 11 million in the economic jobs bill that is being negotiated in Congress right now.
Hiram, what does this march mean to you?
You know what? It means a lot in my personal case as an Hispanic immigrant, as a business owner, as an essential worker. It means a lot. My main goal it is at this point to bring awareness to the rest of the community. Many people know the reason why we are marching. But at this point, I will be glad to let people who don't know the reason to let them know, to bring awareness the reason, like I said, why we are marching. But it means a lot. I'm doing it for my family. I'm doing it for myself, of course. But I'm doing it for the rest of the other essential workers and the rest of the 11 million plus. You know, it is a very, very important thing and very supportive. We have been having, you know, the youngest person in our this delegation is 7 years old. Mm. And our oldest is 71 years old. And a bunch of some other people in between. But it means a lot. And like I say, my main goal is to bring awareness to the rest of the people who don't really know our story or why we are here and why we're doing it.
Hiram, can you share your personal story of immigrating to America?
Well, in my personal case, we supposed to be here just for a certain period of time. We came with a tourist visa. That means I did came legally. After seeing that a better future in this beautiful country, we overstay our visa, but not because we want to break the rules or do something wrong or, you know, since day one after I overstay my visa, mm-hmm. I've been trying to assist my community, which is in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. I've been in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin since pretty much day one, 20 years ago. Like I said, trying to justify myself a little, you know, overstaying my visa. But at the same time, the reason why I'm a Mexican immigrant and I'm a proud Mexican immigrant, but the main reason was seeking a better future for my family. And that was one of the main reasons why we immigrated. I met my wife in college in Mexico, and we were struggling a little. The economy is not the same, of course. And we saw a brighter future in this country, and we overstayed. But at the same time, and I do apologize if I repeat a lot of things, but
no, don't apologize.
I've been trying to justify, like I say, my overstaying. And now that I joined this beautiful organization, Voces de la Frontera, it has been, my arms have been reaching a little farther. And it's not just Voces. In my personal case, in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, I do belong to another nonprofit organization. It is Ebony Vision is a nonprofit. United for Diversity is another profit. United Way is another nonprofit. I'm a Fond du Lac Morning Rotary member. And like I said, what it moves myself, what we give the motivation to keep, it is just helping people. You know, I do fix cars for a living, but other than that, if somebody's in a really need, I love to assist the person regardless of the economy.
You are deeply involved in your community, deeply involved in the Fond du Lac community, as we can certainly hear. Yeah. Christine, what does comprehensive immigration reform, including a path to citizenship, what does that look like to you? What does it entail?
It's citizenship for all, which is like the kind of broad demand out there. It means to try to ensure the 11 million so that everyone is included, especially during this pandemic. It's just highlighted how immigrant workers are essential workers. They have been at the front lines and obviously at a higher levels of risk for themselves, their families, their communities. And we've seen that some other people are still marching with us are, you know, like their parents work in the meat packing industry and those, you know, other essential jobs. And for us, it means we leave no one behind, you know, that we include not just those immigrant workers, but we include their families, you know, their children. We have had a dysfunctional immigration system for way too long. And so you have families growing up. I mean, most of them, you just heard Iram, 20 years here. You know, he has grandchildren. Guadalupe, the oldest member of our group, 71 years old. You know, she's still working today in fast food, and she has grandchildren here. So these are people deeply, you know, in the fabric of our communities, and every day with that fear that it could all fall apart, you know, in a really awful way. So immigration reform means we leave nobody behind, and that it's simple and that it's affordable, because that's a big barrier. Even under DACA, people struggled. We created VOSES and other organizations around the country, created scholarship funds. Because even that, you know, around $500 fee, plus if you need an attorney, you know, it gets expensive for low-income families. So it has to be affordable. It has to be simple. It has to be inclusive. So, you know, LGBTQ families, for instance, the have always been, like, included within that. We want TPS included. We want Dreamers included. Dreamers represent 1 million of essential workers, because with and TPS holders, many of them are frontline healthcare workers, education workers, but they're all also living in this very tenuous status.
We're talking with Christine Newman Ortiz, Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera, Hiram Rabadan Torres of Fond du Lac, marching to Madison for Action on immigration reform. What is your story of coming to America? Has a family member been deported in recent months? What would you like to share about your views on immigration reform and what action you want to see from the Biden administration? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Marchers walking from Milwaukee to Madison this week to draw attention to immigration reform. Pressure from immigrant rights groups in our state to get congressional Democrats to advance legislation that would include a pathway to citizenship for certain immigrants. What do you want to say about a pathway for undocumented workers, for DACA recipients, for people who have temporary protected status? 800-642-1234. Christine Newman Ortiz leads Voces de la Frontera. Hiram Rabadan Torres is a president of Latinos Unidos of Fond du Lac, and they stay with us. Carol now in Madison. Hi, Carol. What would you like to bring up?
Hi. So my name is Carol. I actually am first generation American. My parents were born and raised in Argentina, and I was born here in Wisconsin. And I currently work for La Casa de Esperanza, which is actually a nonprofit in Waukesha. And we work with low-income and Latino-based communities. And, you know, half of my family is DACA. The other half is trying to get their papers. And the reality is, you know, it plays a hardship on one's psyche where you almost feel like it's unfair that you could be stripped from your family any day at any moment. And the reality is, you know, I've seen it because I work in a nonprofit with a Latino-based community. I've actually seen people be deported and their family come to us for help with lawyers or with anything like that. And you were just mentioning, you know, the cost. And the reality is a lot of people can barely pay for food, especially with the COVID incident. Mm. And nowadays, you know, it's very hard for people to be able to afford just being able to stay in the state.
Carol, thank you so much for those insights with La Casa de Esperanza based in Waukesha. Hiram, I'm wondering what organization really helped you get on your feet when you came to Fond du Lac?
What organization, when I first came Fond du Lac, when I first came to Fond du Lac, pretty much, I'm not saying that I was by myself, of course not, but it was up to probably recently, like I said, when I started being more involved in these other nonprofits, and of course, joining voices on the past march, you know, in Milwaukee, in Madison, and that type of, it creates a bigger motivation for me to join Voces de la Frontera directly, to be more involved. But that has been probably in the probably last couple of years. And yeah, like I said, I mean, the way I see things, trying to assist people, you know, as far as I can, again, I don't know if I said this before, but it allows me to reach farther, joining an organization, networking with some other nonprofits. I noticed that, and I noticed that is joining a group of volunteers, and again, on the other different organizations, in that room when we meet, I know that every single person in that room has the same goal, to help others. You know, regardless of your status, regardless of your skin color, we are there to help. And I know that Voices is also doing
And Christine, you know, what are your thoughts there on Carol's story and living in that life of uncertainty and that fear of deportation, and then for Carol to see it happen?
Thank you, Carol, for sharing that, for taking the time to call and sharing that. And because it is true that it's not just the papers, but it's the anxiety and the stress, the constant stress and the constant fear that at any moment the shoe could drop and everything you've built up can be taken away. And 287G is still in existence. Like in Waukesha, we were able to beat it back in Milwaukee County. But it was from the previous administration, you know, this whole effort to deport 11 million people, like, and coercing local government and local law enforcement to be a part of that. And there was a real resistance against that and ultimately a rejection of that. And so really now where we are is the expectation of the Biden administration to fulfill that promise. And so to me, I think, this last four years has been, you know, really hard, and that we have seen, you know, the harm. I mean, every day, I mean, it's just constant, and people deserve it. These two big budget bills, the first one around COVID and this one on jobs, are a response to the pandemic. And immigrant workers and their families, you know, this is the best way we can honor them. And we should honor them as part of this whole response to the economic crisis of the pandemic. They have not had the visibility, the voice that they deserve. And it is it's a very psychologically, emotionally harmful thing. And the little children, the littlest of children, as we mentioned, the youngest here is 7, they know. I remember years ago, we went with a delegation to visit our representatives, including Ron Johnson, with a children's delegation of kids who had, you know, witnessed family members being deported in their home, because it mostly happens in people's homes, and, you know, or who had were living under that constant threat.
Yeah.
And those kids know, they know, and it's scary. And they, you know, they have friends who have ended up in foster care because their parents have been deported. So it's a very unhealthy, cruel thing that's happening, that's being kind of systematically inflicted on children. Parents cannot, because of the lack of a driver's license and the threat of, you know, ending up in deportation because you're driving, and that could lead to, you know, being kind of identified. And it means, you know, parents aren't fully a part of, like, a full life of being able to go to the park with your kids and play, take a vacation with your family. I mean, right now, obviously, people are just surviving. But, you know, those are the things that we need to fight for: healthy communities, healthy families, and citizenship is, you know, fundamentally about just, you know, giving people that peace and that comfort, and that's a good thing for all communities.
Hiram, we only have a few seconds left, but I'm wondering, where do you find hope in all of this? Where do you find your determination?
Well, at this very point, what I see is a light at the very end of the tunnel. You know, we know that at the Senate, and they're talking about it. They're talking about giving a path to citizenship. It is, they are talking about it. But we know that also we are running out of time. That's why the goal of this delegation marching from Milwaukee to Madison, it is just to add a little bit or a lot of pressure. We are just marching. We are not really connected with what is happening out of, you know, we, of course, through the media and all that stuff we notice.
Yeah.
And we hope to make some noise, you know, for people to join us.
Thank you both for joining us. Hiram Rabadan Torres, owner of Hiram's Auto Repair, president of Latinos Unidos of Fond du Lac, and Christine Newman Ortiz, who leads Voces de la Frontera. You're listening to the Ideas Network.